and welcome to Manx Radio's 2026 House of Keys General Election Candidate Interview Series. I'm our election producer, Amy Griffiths, and in the run-up to Thursday the 24th of September, we're giving everyone who's declared their intention to stand in the election the chance to take part in a 30-minute interview with us. We'll be putting them through their paces, asking them why they should be trusted with your vote. Today, it's the turn of Ewan McGuinness, who's standing in Ramsey. He's been interviewed by Phil Gorn.
Falcheru Gus Rias Cajun Shea's Feed. Today I'm talking to Ewan McGuinness, who's standing for the first time in the constituency of Ramsey. So I think we'll start with the obvious question. Why do you want to be an MHK, and what's your motivation behind standing?
So I've been a commissioner for the past 10 years. When I started in local authority politics back in 2016, I had no further ambitions than that. I just wanted to give back something to the community. Over the past 10 years, I've enjoyed, become more and more involved in local politics. It's become a real passion. And with this election coming up, I knew that if I hadn't put my hat in the ring in 6 months' time, I would look back with regret. I've got a real belief that we're heading into a tough at least 5 years. We need to be represented by people who have the best interests of the Isle of Man at heart, which I believe I have, and I believe I can make a difference. So I felt this was the right time to make that step up from local politics to national politics.
And you say that in 6 months' time, or 6 months after the election, you'd regret not standing. Just explain that a little bit more.
Well, I think I would just spend my time looking at decisions that were or weren't being made, the direction that was happening, who was representing the town, and just be judging it based on whether I could have done a better job and whether I should have been involved in that, especially with still maintaining a position as a commissioner. If I didn't go forward, I know I'd be deeply involved over the next 3 years with that, and I just couldn't. I couldn't live with myself if I hadn't tried and seen if the people of Ramsey had faith in me.
Okay. Why do we actually need MHKs? What do you think your role is going to be if you're elected?
Well, we're an independent country, ultimately, aren't we? We absolutely need representation on a national democratic level to direct the way our government is moving. The civil service and the Isle of Man government has so much influence over people's lives on the Isle of Man. It can make people's lives better or worse more than anything else. It's not at a micro level. It's not there to keep the bins emptied. That's local authority stuff. At national level, it's to move strategy. It's to ensure that we as an island are better year on year than we were before. And whether that's healthcare, housing, infrastructure, the big ticket items, or progressive legislation, it's a huge undertaking, and I think a lot of work for the 24 that we have.
Do you think that MHKs, let alone anyone else, understand what the difference is between local and central government? And do you think there's any work needs to be done in relation to understanding that relationship?
I mean, I couldn't speak for the current 24 or the prospective candidates. I think generally there's a misunderstanding, and a lot of people, which is just natural, focus on what they can see and touch in their day-to-day lives. And that is perhaps sometimes provided a bias with the way some MHKs will naturally focus their efforts and attention. I think it's a balance, though. You can't ignore what your representatives, the people you're representing want. You've got to act in the best interests of the people who elect you, ultimately. But you've also got to balance that with a wider, larger picture of the Isle of Man as a whole.
So, in terms of what we know about your policies, I mean, what you've said in terms of your comments to Manx Radio when we were initially setting all this up. You chose housing, healthcare reform and Ramsey as your priorities. So let's have a look at some of those. Housing. Tell us why housing is a priority for you.
Well, affordable housing, be it social housing provided by the Isle of Man government or affordable housing in the private sector, is, I think, the absolute single most important thing issue on the Isle of Man at the present time, and it has been for the past 5 or 10 years. We've consistently not grasped the nettle. We don't look at it in terms of investing in infrastructure. We seem to want to commission more and more reports without appreciating that ultimately at some point we've got to spend some money and invest. I think the issues that we have, a lot of the issues we have, are symptoms of people not being able to afford good quality, decent housing, whether that's through social sector, renting privately or purchasing. And we need to stop looking at targets and figures and reports and actually just go back to a principle of, well, we need more houses. We need to improve the housing stock on the Isle of Man so that our young people have somewhere to buy, our ageing population have somewhere to downsize to, and the system keeps moving and flowing. And ultimately that comes down to just building houses.
And obviously you've had an opportunity to do something about that as a Ramsey Town Commissioner. I mean, how many houses over the last 5 years have been built in Ramsey?
From a social housing perspective, I don't believe we've built any. It's not for want of trying. And this comes back to, I don't believe the civil service, the government, local or national, have bad intentions. I think they're all filled with good intentioned people. But we are bogged down in bureaucracy and risk aversion. And take Ramsey, it goes back to 2021 where we identified a plot of land to purchase to expand to build 30 flats. And we are still only at the planning stage with that. And that is purely because it's just weighed down in people sort of moving sheets of paper around the place. Whereas really what we need is good quality housing, making a difference in the town. And rather than sit and look at brownfield sites and eyesores and moving the deck chairs around, we need to just get on with it, I think.
So in particular then, in relation to that, I mean, what have you done as a Ramsey Town Commissioner, or indeed Ramsey Commissioners done, to actually change that, you know, in terms of if it is all about bureaucracy, what steps have you taken to improve the situation?
So I think it's a twofold approach. I've not been backward about coming forward about making that publicly aware that these are the issues. I think that open transparency, shining a light on these issues, is important and part of your duty as a public representative. You've got to highlight those matters and hope that public scrutiny encourages things. I've tried to get our local authorities' housing strategy built so that we have the kind of the documentary evidence to support all of our plans to hopefully make the bureaucracy easier. So I can sit and complain about it, but also I've got to, on the other side, find ways to work it, to make it, if there's departments that want certain information in certain ways, then we have to be better at doing that. And achieve those goals and make sure that everything as a local authority is done so that we can happily turn around and say, well, actually, we are not the hold up here. And then that leads back into the public view. I think there are, like I said, good intentions as to why a lot of questions are asked with certain things and how, you know, we aren't just spending public money willy-nilly. I get that. But there comes a point where there is also a certain amount of reticence and concern about large figures, whereas actually I think it should be turned on its head and said, well, actually we want value for money, but we need to invest, and social housing and housing generally is an investment, not a cost.
So I'm a little confused, because on the one hand there you are saying government is far too risk averse, we need to get on, we need to start making decisions, but then on the other hand you're saying in your on your website the House of Keys needs more scrutiny, more challenge and a stronger focus on accountability. How can you have those two opposites? Because the more you challenge, scrutinise and hold people accountable, is the more bureaucracy that inevitably ends up having to be produced, surely.
I disagree. I think if you have strong scrutiny at the first line, at the strategy, at the directional level, and you end up with a direction through the Ireland Plan, through government, that says this is where we are going, as long as it's been properly scrutinised at that level, then it's the right decision and should move forward. And it should free up bureaucracy at the lower level, because the civil servants, the public, whatever area, private or public, have the confidence to know that the decision that they're moving towards is the right one and will not be U-turned on. If you have that proper scrutiny up front at the top level and that proper transparency, and everyone knows that actually we're moving in the direction, it's got the right reasons and we will not be deviating from that because it's the right direction, then everything else flows into it, because you have a clear goal, clear strategy that every decision should easily be marked up against, and if it meets it, then it should just go straight through.
So because we do have an extensive, not so much just in the Keys, but Tynwald generally has an extensive array now of scrutiny committees that produce significant reports. It doesn't look as though government is becoming more efficient as a result. It doesn't look as though more decisions are getting taken as a result. Where is it all going wrong, do you think?
I think the Ireland Plan has to incorporate those directions. So the current structure we have, it seems good on paper to have the scrutiny committees, and I've listened to a fair few, but they are, it's almost like the stable door after the horse is bolted. We're talking about things that have been done, and therefore what happens is a committee comes to Tynwald with a series of recommendations that are to change course or to alter things that are already in place. And then there is a natural, I would say, us and them situation often, where the council ministers seem to just object in principle, and we end up with these two sides. Whereas ideally, I think what you should be doing is adding scrutiny to our Ireland Plan before we issue and move forward with the Ireland Plan. That's the time and the level. Now, our election of the Chief Minister, the way we're structured, it doesn't lend itself very easily. But we shouldn't, to my mind, be rushing into something in October or whatever time frame this next regime will set, and then just glibly follow it. I would rather us see, in the arc of 5 years of a term, spend a bit more time making sure that the direction we're going in is right, and then have the confidence to follow that through.
Last time round, we had our Ireland Plan produced after about a year, and the notable thing about our Ireland Plan was that it was to be a flexible document that would change. So are you suggesting that once our Ireland Plan has been produced, we should just stick with it and for the 4 years that remain, and is a year too long to be able to dedicate to deciding what the direction of government should be?
Well, what I don't want is an Ireland Plan that's delivered in silo, in isolation, that is just sort of unveiled, and then this is where we're doing, and then people start responding to it afterwards, in much the same way as our budget is every year, more or less, or certainly appears to from the outside. Maybe I'd feel differently if I was in the corridors of Tynwald. Maybe I'd have more information. And I'm not suggesting that you set something in stone in 2026 or 27 and then that's it, because obviously the real world doesn't work like that. But what it should be is decisions made for the right reasons, and we shouldn't be flexible simply because of immediate knee-jerk negative public opinion. And what we should be able to do is justify and explain through, because we'll have had full scrutiny across the board as to why the direction is the right one. And setting a whole island plan, I don't see why you have to wait. To me, if you've got a principled direction, how you get there can come out as and when things are ready, rather than simply waiting for one large tome that takes probably as long to read as it does to write.
I mean, we could spend a long time talking about that, and indeed housing, which we've kind of moved on from. But let's move on to healthcare, which is another of your priorities, healthcare reform. I mean, healthcare has undergone massive reform over the past 6 or 7 years. Why do you think we need more?
Well, I don't believe it's worked. I don't think anyone, and again, I'm looking from the outside in, can see the rising costs and the anecdotally not improved service to match it and think that this is a positive move. And certainly representing Ramsey in the north, we're seeing firsthand this limbo period, this stagnation with decision making, with our two main pieces of health infrastructure, Cummell Moor Residential Home and the Ramsey Cottage Hospital. And we're seeing getting caught between two or three departments or whatever you want to call Manx Care, all sort of looking at each other as to who's to blame, who's to pay, who's to take responsibility. And really what we need is ownership and for something to be done correctly and to be open and transparent about it. I've called till I'm blue in the face for the last more than 6 months just to have a public meeting about the future of the Cottage Hospital in Ramsey. I think that's what the people of Ramsey, the North and the Island deserve. And instead what we have is this horrible drip feed of information through Tynwald questions, through FOIs, through Manx Care Board reports. You don't get a full story or a full picture. It feels like it feels like we're being told there's a strategy, but I'm not seeing much evidence of that direction. And if that's the case, in what I can see in the North, it says to me that whatever system we have isn't working. It might have gone through reform 5 years ago, but that doesn't mean to say that it's right.
So what needs to change? I mean, give us a few specifics.
Well, look, I'm not here to pretend I have the answers, certainly when I am not directly involved in any of those departments on a day-to-day basis in my current role. And I would hate to make glib promises or glib statements that will, you know, easily be sort of torn apart by people who are far more knowledgeable and experienced within the areas. But ultimately, I think we need to have some open, honest conversations about what we as an island want from our healthcare and what we're willing to pay.
And do you not think we've had those? I mean, wasn't that the whole reason why Manx Care was established, was because we had these conversations? It was decided that it wasn't a good idea to have politicians directly in control over the way in which healthcare was provided. We had an expert came in and explained how a new system needed to work. So we've kind of had the conversation. Surely it's time now to be fixing what doesn't seem to be working.
But the issue we've now created, I don't disagree with the principle, the good intention of that. Yeah, I can see we don't want to live in a world where the health minister is individually trying to interject in things. Absolutely, healthcare professionals have to be separate and independent. But to my mind, what's happening now is we have two, three, maybe even four government departments working against each other. And you see that, I think, across government generally. Every department is interested in that government's department's aim, and they will offset costs or responsibility or manpower into another department, which ends up in situations like the Cottage Hospital, where you find out that really we've not spent enough or we've not done enough maintenance. Something has fallen down there over the last 4 or 5 years to suddenly have this report. And we seem to be spending more time kind of subtly pointing fingers at each other rather than one group. Now, whether that's in the current system, the DHSC needs to actually start being more the regulator of the department of Manx Care, or maybe Manx Care need to be allowed to direct more. But we can't keep what feels like spending money to argue with each other.
So that sounds like you may be an advocate for a government becoming a single legal entity. Is that something you've considered?
I have considered it. I think there's a lot of technical aspects to that need to be thrashed out. But irrespective of whether it's a single entity or departmental, what we can't, and I think this maybe stems more into how government has managed run our direction. If you take our savings project, where we've at very high level clearly sort of stated to departments, you need to save some money, you need to cut £1 million out of your budget, take education. And they have done their best. And, you know, again, good intentions. A lot of people have worked very hard to shave their budget and save some money. They haven't looked at what is the best service they're providing for education. We've not, as a government, looked at like what we want from our education department. We've simply said, save some money. And I've seen this firsthand, an example where the education department have, you know, reduced their school swimming lessons or rejigged their portfolio, the schedule. And they have saved money from the education department and reduced the amount of income going to the regional pools and reduced the amount of income going to bus vanning for the hire of the buses. Well, that's not saving the Isle of Man government any money. It's just moving the costs around. And if that's the sort of siloed approach where we aren't thinking, what's our end goal? What do we want to do to achieve it? And how much will it cost? And what's the best value for money out of that cost? If we're looking at everything from a pure numbers perspective, we end up, I think, with worse service and probably false economies, because we end up saving money this year simply for the sake of hitting a target and not actually looking at what the real cost is, because it's not that person's responsibility at that time.
We'll move on. I mean, we 29 minutes never seems long enough for these for me, but we'll move on to Ramsey, which is your third in your list of priorities. I mean, I'm not saying it's necessarily third, but you have three priorities. So you had an Instagram post about the ruinous derelict properties, Jewel Box, The Tide and Alden House on Parliament Street. Now, those, you presume the town commissioners have been lobbying hard to get those dealt with for some time. And then, now that they've gone and the site's been levelled, you're saying we should be asking what can be done to help overcome the barriers to getting a development done, and whether this through government schemes, financial incentives or other forms of support that encourage investment in brownfield sites. Isn't it a bit late to be thinking that? Surely that should have been part of the thinking when the call was being made to get them demolished.
Well, Ramsey Town Commissioners weren't calling for those sites to be demolished. Alden House was unsafe, absolutely support that. And the landowner, property owner, had all three sites and wished to demolish them to redevelop, in favour of that. I don't believe I've ever called for the demolition of unsightly buildings in Ramsey. What I want, though, is the existing properties to be maintained, and if we have a vacant site, I want to see how we can get something to replace it. There's no point having removing a chipped tooth by having a gap in your mouth. We need to, you know, replace things. There are some very clear financial challenges if you're a commercial entrepreneur, you need to get your money back in a reasonable time frame from investing in the property, and construction of that sort of site isn't financially viable at this present time. So I think, you know, I obviously have a very focused interest on Ramsey High Street and improving there, but this is an island-wide issue. We've taken an approach as a government for the Manx Development Corporation, very Douglas-focused. We seem to be, from what I've observed, Manx Development Corporation seems to be looking mainly at taking already owned Manx government land and repurposing it. Whereas I think we should be looking at better ways to incentivise developers to redevelop brownfield sites, because fundamentally it's not attractive to develop in a town centre. The costs are going to be higher. What you get out of it is not as great. And whether that's through direct action, so as you know, the Isle of Man government, we say actually we want to invest in the high street, and we'll purchase the property, we'll develop it, we'll have a mixture of social housing or, you know, private rent through MDC, whatever vehicle you want to do, or through a grant scheme that's actually accessible and makes sense and is achievable by all levels of investor. But again, we have to go back to what is our end goal. We're great at creating schemes that tick a lot of boxes, are very risk averse, very protective, make sure that, you know, we can't be, as an Ireland government, taken for a ride by nefarious parties. But also equally, we seem to be putting off a lot of people. The schemes never seem to be fully utilised, and they don't seem to be making a difference.
You say that you've spent the last 10 years getting to know your way around Manx politics and how government works. I mean, what is available to developers? What tools are available to developers, to you as commissioners, to government, to get sites developed?
So what's available to Ramsdale commissioners is next to nothing. And that's a little bugbear of mine that an awful lot of the grant schemes, you know, take the green energy. I'm not going to talk at great lengths about how I'm a green person. I'm not. I'm a pragmatic individual. But, you know, there's no availability of those schemes to local authorities, which just seems madness to me. But to private investors, you've got some green energy schemes. You've also got this brownfield site consultation they're going through now, where they're highlighting areas, and there's, you know, up to, I think, 25% of costs available. But how you get to that 25%, you've really got to put an awful lot of investment into the scheme. And I think that means that you end up with it only being available to, you know, very high-end developers. If you're an independent individual, you're not necessarily going to be able to easily access that, which is why it brings back to the principle. What do we want to achieve? And we should be working as in the public sector to facilitate and encourage and improve and help, not set up a scheme and sit back and wait. We need to be more proactive.
In terms of Ramsey, what has specifically changed in Ramsey because of your actions as a commissioner?
Well, Ramsey Town Commissioners are the only local authority on the island that has live streaming of its public meetings. We're incredibly open and transparent.
And is that because of something you did?
Yeah, it was my proposal. Yeah. And it wasn't just my proposal. I didn't just say it and sit back. I made it happen. I got involved with people who had the expertise to help set that up. I ensured that it occurred. I've brought public art to the town. Every public art on in the Morrick estate is because of me at every level. We've just unveiled a fantastic piece of art at the back of the bowling alley in Ramsey, which is, I think, one of the best pieces of art on the island, thanks to the DfE's financial support. And that, I think, is massively important. When you're in a local authority, you can't fix the potholes. You can't take direct action on a lot of the sort of issues. What you can do is make the amenity of the area massively improved.
Well, we're just about out of time, but we've got probably a minute left for you to tell us in a nutshell why people should vote for you.
I have Ramsey at my heart. I want to put Ramsey first, but not entirely. I'm very focused on the island. I believe I have picked up enough over the last 10 years of being in local politics to know my way around. But I'm not institutionalised. I don't take no for an answer easily. I'm willing to fight for Ramsey the North and the Isle of Man. I'm incredibly passionate about it. And I'll give my absolute best over the next 5 years if I'm lucky enough to be elected.
And if you are elected, what should people judge you on in 5 years' time?
Well, I will be open and transparent the whole way through. So I hope that you can judge me every week, every month, not just in 5 years' time.
That was Ciarán McGuinness, who's hoping to represent Ramsey in the House of Keys. Also standing in the constituency is Laurie Hooper. This interview, along with all the others recorded as part of this series, will be available shortly after broadcast from your usual podcast provider. And don't forget, we have everything you need to know about the election, which is taking place on Thursday, the 24th of September, on our dedicated website, which you can find at manxradio.com.